Until then, the use of Alf Seder remains controversial. Dwarves. Homeworld. Nidavellir. Appearance. Craggy and short. Will turn to stone if left in the sun too long. Best known for expert metalwork and craftsmanship. Metal in Motion by Gonda. Long before I made barstools for Nabby's Tavern, I had a career crafting labor-saving devices. You know the type of thing. Push a button, pull a lever, turn a knob, and ta-da! A machine does your work for you. That career turned out to be unbelievably boring. Fortunately, destiny steered me in another direction. On an accidental trip to Midgard, I met a human named Rube Goldberg. Goldberg, son of Hannah, came up with these crazy contraptions designed to do simple tasks in the most unnecessarily complicated manner possible. The contraptions, known as Rube Goldberg machines, were poetry in motion. I took Rube's concept, ran with it straight back to Nidavellir, and set about making my own creations. I repurposed bits and pieces I salvaged over the years. A fan, a toy truck, and a pack of dominoes from Midgard, several cat food cans from Vanaheim, Freya's cats ask for it by name, a snow shovel from Niflheim, a coat hanger from my friend Blitzen, you get the idea. I welded and soldered, hammered, and fired those pieces into a sequence of interconnected parts. Altogether, they formed a thing of beauty. My first Rube Goldberg machine was designed to light my kiln. Here's how it worked. A handcrafted silver ball spiraled down a hammered steel track suspended by spun wire from my ceiling. The ball landed in a buffed to mirror shine cat food can. The can tipped the ball into another can, which tipped it into another, and so on through 7 cans. The final can tipped the ball into the bed of the toy truck. The truck, refitted for a monorail I'd constructed, shot across the floor and tapped the first in a long twisting line of dominoes that spelled out Gonda. The last falling dominoes climbed up a set of stairs engraved with images of famous dwarves. The final domino struck the coat hanger, now fortified with an enamel finish, sending it whirling around. The coat hanger flicked the switch that turned on the fan. The fan blew against the snow shovel blade. The shovel fell over and landed on the high end of a seesaw that I had forged myself from bronze and decorated with gemstones. The low end flew up and launched another ball, gold this time, clear across the room, where it hit a hammer handed down to me by my ancestors. The hammer fell onto the button that starts my kiln, and voila, the fire lit. Would it have been easier to just push the button myself? Well, of course. Would pushing the button have been as satisfying? No way. You might think I'm crazy for spending so much time and effort on such creations, but to me, metal that moves, moves me. Valkyries. Homeworlds, Midgard and Asgard. Appearance. Fierce, strong human females, often on horses, capable of flight, armed with shields and swords or axes. Best known for identifying individuals who have died in the act of saving others and conveying these heroes to Valhalla. First Flight of a Valkyrie. Diary entries. Name withheld to protect author's privacy. Day 1. I'm a Valkyrie. Man, even after writing it down, it doesn't seem possible, but it's true. I'm an honest-to-goodness chooser of the slain, a handmaiden of Odin. One minute, I'm walking down the street. The next, this fierce-looking, helmet-wearing, spear-carrying woman on a flying horse appears in the sky above me. She swoops down and holds out her hand. I'm Gunilla, captain of the Valkyries, she says all serious and imposing. You have been chosen by Odin to select and care for fallen heroes in the afterlife, where they will ceaselessly train for Ragnarok, the doomsday battle of the gods against the giants. Do you accept? I never even heard of Odin or any of those other things, but refusing didn't seem like an option. So here I am in the lobby of Hotel Valhalla with other new recruits, waiting to find out what happens next. Day 2. Exhausted. More tomorrow. Day 5. Sorry not to have written for a few days. Here's a quick recap of what I've been doing. Toured all 540 floors of Hotel Valhalla, flirted with some good-looking guys on the lower levels. Endured a lecture on the Nine Worlds given by some fossilized thane named Snorty. Might be Snorri? So boring, I almost started snoring. Had it drilled into my head that we bring back the immortal essence, i.e. the souls, and leave the bodies of the fallen behind. Got fitted for my Valkyrie uniform, helmet, chainmail tunic, leggings, boots, sword. Not to brag, but I look smoking hot as a Viking warrior. Waited on tables in the feast hall of the slain. In Herjar, the proper name of the dead heroes who live? In Valhalla, eat and drink a lot. Magically returned to Midgard, the human realm, according to Snorty, every dawn to live the days as a normal teenager. I'm due back in Midgard in a few hours. Gotta grab some sleep before then, so good night. P.S. Just remembered all the good-looking guys here are dead. Bummer. Day 9. Best day ever! It started with Gunilla summoning us newbies from Midgard. I was at school, heading to math class, so I veered into the restroom and climbed out the window. There was a whoosh, and suddenly I was back at the hotel. Don't ask me how, I have no clue. We gathered in the feast hall. It was hours before dinner, so the place was deserted. Gunilla started talking. Take a look at the trainees next to you, and know this. One will perish in the line of duty. Just because you can travel to and from this afterlife doesn't mean you're invincible. You can be killed. Die honorably, and your memory will live on forever. Die dishonorably, and you will be forgotten. I was thinking, okay, might have been nice to know this before I signed up, when a bunch of veteran Valkyries came in. One approached me, introduced herself as Margaret, and said, you're going to love what comes next. Before I could ask what she meant, Gunilla called out, flight attendants, prepare for takeoff. Margaret grabbed my arm and said, don't look down. Then she shot straight up into the air. Here's the good part. I went with her. I was flying. Okay, sure. Technically, I didn't fly. Margaret did, with me Velcro to her for dear life. But oh my Odin, it was still amazing. Tomorrow I get to try it myself. It's going to be awesome. Day 10. Hour 1. Took off. Crashed into Laerator, stupid tree. Took off. Fell onto the Thane's table. Took off. Crashed into Laerator and fell onto the Thane's table. An unbelievably fat, tree-dwelling goat landed on top of me. Hour 3. Reenacted the Wright brothers' first flight at Kitty Hawk. That is, got airborne for less than a minute before inevitably crashing. Into Laerator, yet again. Hour 6. Longer flight. Landed on my feet. I immediately fell on my face, but still, result! Hour 9. Actual swooping and soaring occurred. Sound the horn of triumph, people. I am a Valkyrie. Day 11. Turns out I have to learn how to fly on a horse made of mist, too. Flying solo with fallen heroes doesn't work so well. Apparently they tend to squirm, which causes turbulence. Lessons start tomorrow. Square one, here I come. The Norns. Homeworld, Asgard. Specifically the lake at the root of the Tree of Laerator, in the Feast Hall of the Slain. Appearance. A trio of 9-foot-tall, snow-white, fog-enshrouded, spooky-looking females in flowing white-hooded dresses. Best known for controlling the destinies of mortals and gods, also making enigmatic proclamations about those destinies. Fun with fate. We at Hotel Valhalla understand that hearing a proclamation about your destiny can be overwhelming for a new inheritee, especially if that proclamation is from the Norns. Why not take a break with Destiny Buzzword? It's easy, fun, and sometimes even accurate. To come up with your 3 key destiny words, find the first letter of your first name, last letter of your last name, and the month you were born. For example, Snorri Sturluson was born in March, so his buzzwords are intelligent, clever, and coward. Who knows? Maybe someday your words will be revealed to have deep meaning. Destiny buzzword. A. Terrible. B. Hero. C. Fight. D. Everlasting. E. Wolf. F. Creative. G. Warrior. H. Challenge. I. Deadly. J. Fearsome. K. Knowledge. L. Fall. M. Worthy. N. Clever. O. Sword. P. Fearless. Q. Doomed. R. Battle. S. Intelligent. T. Mistake. U. Quest. V. Ruin. W. Sacrifice. X. Search. Y. Healer. Z. Destroy. January. Magic. February. Betrayal. March, coward. April, daring. May, honorable. June, victorious. July, injury. August, eviscerate. September, darkness. October, unlimited. November, giant. December, love. Fantastic Creatures by Hunding. Now, I'm supposed to profile the creatures that can't speak for themselves, as well as those that can, but say either incredibly annoying or unbelievably hurtful things. There are a few hurtful things I'd like to say to Helgi about now. I'm leaving this in to see if he even listens to my work. Our menagerie of beasts fall into three categories: notable, regrettable, and edible. Notable ones make worthwhile contributions to the world or are significant for other reasons. Those that are regrettable are alarming in every possible way, some more so than others. As for the edible creatures, well, I think that category is self-explanatory. Needhog. Category: regrettable. Homeworld: Roots of Yggdrasil. Appearance: snaky, with sharp teeth and an irritated expression. Best known for: gnawing on Yggdrasil's roots. This fearsome dragon has one purpose in life: to cause destruction by eating away at the base of our existence. It's a mystery to me why we put up with this behavior. I mean, can't someone slip him a chew toy? The only time Needhog isn't snacking on the roots is when he's coming up with new insults to be delivered to the unnamed resident at the top of the tree. The Anonymous Eagle of Yggdrasil. Category: regrettable. Homeworld: top of Yggdrasil. Appearance: fierce and feathery. Best known for: shaking the treetops to cause high winds, earthquakes, and storms. This is the aforementioned unnamed resident, i.e., the receiver of Needhog's insults. Which brings up a second mystery. Why doesn't this bird have a name? If it's a question of selecting one, we could just hold a contest. Pick a name out of a helmet, or throw a dart at choices tacked to a board. Seriously, what's the big deal? Incidentally, the eagle fires insults, along with nasty lies, rumors, and other hateful whisperings, right back at Needhog. How, you may wonder, are such messages exchanged when the eagle and dragon are on opposite ends of the world tree? Listen on. Ratatosk. Category: very, very regrettable. Homeworld: branches of Yggdrasil. Appearance: an enormous, ferocious, red-furred squirrel with yellow eyes and razor-sharp teeth and claws. Best known for: carrying insults between the Anonymous Eagle and Needhog. Also, draining the will to live from those who hear its insult-filled yark. Just Between You and Me by Ratatosk. Come here, you're slow. Don't worry, anxiety is your middle name. I won't bark at you. I want to tell you your teammates blame you for that loss, a secret. I know why Needhog and the Eagle, they're laughing at you, not with you, began trading insults. I know your best will never be good enough, because I'm the one who started the feud. I was bored your stories make everyone yawn. To liven things up, I send a whispered taunt you've never had an original idea. Down Yggdrasil's trunk to the dragon, only worms are lowlier than you. And another up to the eagle, you'll never fly. Care to hear, you crack under pressure, what those insults were? Then come closer still, you're afraid of everything and everyone. And let me whisper, you're too trusting, in your ear. You have earwax. Yark! Hydron. Category: edible, sort of. Homeworld: Asgard, specifically the branches of Leirdr in the Hotel Valhalla. Appearance: overweight, leaky goat. Best known for: providing milk that is brewed into mead. Eikthrimir, also goes by the nickname Ike. Category: notable. Homeworld: Asgard, specifically the branches of Leirdr. Appearance: stag with water-gushing antlers. Best known for: spouting water for the rivers and streams of the world. Sirimnir. Category: edible. Homeworld: Asgard, specifically the feast hall of the slain in the Hotel Valhalla. Appearance: enormous animal of indeterminate species. Best known for: being the main course at dinner every night for every resident. A Trickster Traitor by Halfborn Gunderson. This story was told to me by one of the older in Harriar, who heard it from someone else who used to catch Hydron's milk in the cauldron, who claims to have heard it from Hydron herself. Whether it is true or not, I cannot say, but neither can I imagine a reason for the goat to make up such a tale. In the end, you must judge for yourself. One night, Ike and Hydrun were hanging out with Cybermere, keeping him company while he resurrected, as they often did when the subject of Ragnarok came up. It occurs to me, Hydrun said, shifting slightly so her milk wouldn't keep dripping onto Cybermere's flank, that no one has ever mentioned what our fate is to be when the giants recreate the cosmos. I imagine we'd be useful to the Jotun, Cybermere mused. After all, they'll need water and mead and food, won't they? I don't know. Who can tell with giants, Hydrun said. What do you think, Ike? We could always ask the Norns if our destinies are to die with the gods or live with the giants, the stag replied. The threesome cast anxious looks at the lake below. Or not, Ike added. Maybe I can help. Loki swung down from a branch above and landed beside Cybermere. In the days before he was tied to a boulder, he often hid in Labrador because it was a useful spot from which to spy on the other gods. You? Hydrun gave a skeptical snort. What could you do? I could talk to the giants on your behalf, tell them what you have to offer. I'm heading to Jotunheim anyway. I owe Angerboda a visit. She's the giantess mother of my kids Fenris, Jormungand, and Hel, he supplied upon seeing their blank expressions. The goat, the stag, and the enormous food supply exchanged glances. Give us a minute, Hydrun said. Take all the time you want, I'll be over here. Whistling, Loki strolled across the room to the Thane's table, looking for all the world as if he couldn't care less what they decided. Secretly, however, he very much wanted them to agree, for he planned to use the animal's inquiry as an opportunity to find out if the giants were willing to spare non-giants on the Day of Doom. Loki intended to be among those spared, no matter whose side he was fighting on come Ragnarok. Meanwhile, the three creatures talked it over. None of them trusted Loki, but as they couldn't leave Laerdor themselves, they decided they had no choice. We give you permission to tell the giants what we have to offer, Ike said. Then I'll be on my way, Loki vanished. No sooner had he left than Odin himself appeared. From his all-seeing throne, Hlidskjalf, he'd heard what had transpired, and he was troubled. Have you learned nothing after living eons among Inherjar, he demanded. You would rather betray those who have given you a home than die a noble death defending that home? The beasts bowed their heads. Like a well-aimed arrow, Odin's accusation had hit its mark. They vowed then and there to stand with the gods and think no more of the giants. And so they have done. As for Loki, his destiny was determined long before his meeting the animals. Nothing he said or did would change what fate had in store. Sleipnir. Category: Notable. Homeworld: Asgard. Appearance: Massive eight-legged horse with steel-gray hair, a white mane, and black eyes. Best known for having eight legs, being able to fly despite being wingless, and belonging to Odin. My Dad's Mom, by Stanley, son of Sleipnir, translated via a horse whisperer. Most of you think Loki is 100% bad and, like, always messing things up for the gods. That is so not true. One time, she helped Odin and the others out of a huge problem. That's right, I said she. Loki is my grandmother. I'll give you a moment to process that before I go on. Ready? Okay, here's what happened. Long ago, a builder came to Asgard. He offered to surround the world with a wall to protect the gods from attack. He said he could build the wall in three seasons, and he wanted Freya, the sun, and the moon in exchange. Freya said no way. The sun and moon took her side. Loki, though, thought the wall was a great idea. He convinced the other deities to make a counteroffer. If the builder could finish the wall in one season, he could have what he asked for. The task was impossible, Loki pointed out, so Freya, the sun, and the moon would be safe. And so would the gods, because the Aesir would have at least part of a wall. The gods proposed the plan to the builder. He agreed to the terms and went to work. What the Aesir didn't realize was that the builder, probably a giant in disguise, had the strongest, fastest, and hardest-working stallion in the worlds to help him. As the season wound down, the fortification neared completion. Freya was a wreck. The sun and moon weren't too happy either. Everyone blamed Loki. Loki owned up to his mistake and set about making things right. Since the stallion was the problem, he figured out a way to get rid of it. He shapeshifted into a gorgeous mare. One flirtatious flick of the mane and coy bat of the eye later, and that stallion was smitten. When Loki took off for the woods, the stallion gave chase, and that was that. Without his helper, the builder couldn't finish the wall by the deadline. Freya, the sun, and the moon stayed right where they were, and sometime later, Loki the mayor gave birth to my dad. So you see, Loki's not all bad. Jormungand. Category, notable. Homeworld, Seas of Jotunheim. Appearance, a poison-shooting snake, mottled skin of yellow, brown, and green. Enormous green eyes, ridged forehead, snub-nosed snout, rows of sharp teeth, and a really, really long legless body. Best known for encircling Midgard and biting its own tail. Prophesied to consume Thor at Ragnarok. Music Hath Charms by Njord. If Jormungand ever fully awakens, he'll thrash so violently that tsunamis will swamp the shorelines throughout Midgard. So whenever the world serpent seems restless, a group of my Inheriar descendants, the only ones who can safely traverse the seas at such a time, race out to the oceans, dive deep below the surface, and sing him these lullabies. My son, Frey, helped write them, so they are infused with the peace and warmth needed for a sound sleep. As an interesting side note, humans overheard these songs at some point in history. They adapted the melodies, but replaced the original lyrics with their own, and Inheriar may recognize the Midgard versions. Frey's Originals, Midgard Versions. Slumber, slumber, Jormungand, twinkle, twinkle, little star. On seaweed bed so far from land, how I wonder what you are. Sleep forever peacefully, up above the world so high. Deep within the Midgard sea, like a diamond in the sky. Slumber, slumber, Jormungand, twinkle, twinkle, little star. Nestled deep within the sand, how I wonder what you are. Bite your tail, Yori, rockabye baby. Under the waves, in the treetop. No need to surface when the wind blows. Avoid the sun's rays, the cradle will rock. Cuddle an urchin when the bow breaks. Snuggle a shark, the cradle will fall. Just stay down below, and down will come baby. And sleep in the dark, cradle and all. Please stay sleeping, please stay sleeping. Are you sleeping, are you sleeping? Jormungand, Jormungand. Brother John, Brother John. Shut your eyes so tightly, morning bells are ringing. Snooze all day and nightly, morning bells are ringing. Don't wake up, don't wake up. Ding, ding, dong, ding, ding, dong. Fenris Wolf. Category, unbelievably regrettable. Homeworld, Island of Lingvi. Appearance, gray and black fur, powerful build, fangs, and blue eyes. Normal size for a typical wolf, but has an extra intelligent glint in his eyes. Best known for terrifying savagery, being restrained by the rope Gleipnir, signaling the start of Ragnarok upon being freed from that rope. The Interview I Didn't Want to Do by Snorri Sturluson. I wanted on record that I never intended to go anywhere near the island of Lingvi, and I certainly had no interest in talking to the beast that's trapped there. I didn't realize that's where Hotel Valhalla's fold-out boat had dropped me until it was too late. So if the following transcript of our conversation seems a little unprofessional at times, keep in mind that I was wholly unprepared. Snorri Sturluson. Wait a minute. This isn't Norumbega. Fenris Wolf. Hello, Snorri. Snorri Sturluson runs around in circles screaming, "Where's the boat? Where's the boat?" Fenris Wolf. Nice of you to drop by. Snorri Sturluson falls to knees. Gods help me! Someone get me out of here! Fenris Wolf. We never talk anymore. Have you been? Snorri Sturluson covers head with arms and moans, "Leave me alone, I have nothing to say to you." Fenris Wolf. That hurts me, Snorri. It really does. Here I'm thinking, wow, a Thane has come to see me. Not even the gods do that. He must be more courageous than they are. Editor's note. At this point, the Raven records that Snorri stopped moaning and started tuning into what Fenris Wolf was saying. But you're just like the rest of them. Hunches shoulders and hangs head. Ah, why do I even bother? Snorri Sturluson. I'm sorry, it's just... Well, I was tricked into coming here. Fenris Wolf gestures at Gleipnir with snout. Just as I was. We're a lot alike, you and I. Snorri Sturluson. Except I'm a human and you're a wolf. Fenris Wolf. Technicalities. We're alike where it counts. In here. Restraint interferes with attempt to tap chest. Darn this rope. It ruined a special moment for us. Snorri Sturluson. Shoves closer to Fenris Wolf. It looks like a nuisance. Is it really tight? Fenris Wolf. Not as bad as it used to be, but it does get in the way. What can I do, though? No one is brave enough to come near me and untie it. Snorri Sturluson moves closer still. I'm brave. You said so yourself. Fenris Wolf widens eyes. You're right. Guess that makes you brave and smart. But I bet you hear that all the time back in Valhalla. Snorri Sturluson. Oh, not as much as you'd think. Fenris Wolf. Go on, good-looking thane like you. Those Valkyries probably flit about you like bees around honey. Snorri Sturluson blushes. No. Well, maybe a few. Fenris Wolf, I knew it. And I know something that would really impress them. You could... Nah, you wouldn't do it. Never mind. Snorri Sturluson, what? What were you going to say? Fenris Wolf. No, it's too much to ask. Forget it. Snorri Sturluson, seriously, tell me, I insist. Fenris Wolf, well, if you insist. I was just thinking, you being such a smart, brave, good-looking thane, if anybody could figure out how to untie this old rope, it'd be you. Snorri Sturluson. Oh, I don't know if I should. I mean, the gods bound you in it for a good reason, didn't they? Fenris Wolf. Oh, sure, sure. Assuming being true to myself was a good reason, that is. Was it my fault that I was a boisterous pup who liked to wrestle and play tug-of-war, or that I grew up to be a strong, fierce fighter? You'd think those traits would be appreciated in Asgard, not punished. Snorri Sturluson. Is that why you're here? I could have sworn. Fenris Wolf turns his back. Listen, just forget I asked, all right? I took you for a guy who stood for decency and fairness. I read you wrong. My mistake. Snorri Sturluson. But, Fenris Wolf, I thought we had something in common. Seeing as how you were hoodwinked into coming here by the gods just like I was. Again, my mistake. Snorri Sturluson. Well, maybe I could just loosen one knot. Fenris Wolf. I don't even want you to do it now. Snorri Sturluson stands. That's too bad, mister, because I'm going to. Fenris Wolf. Seriously, don't come near me. Snorri Sturluson. You can't stop me. Fenris Wolf. I'm warning you. You come one step closer and I won't be held responsible for my actions. Snorri Sturluson. Get ready to do your worst then, because here I come. Editor's note. At this point, the Raven stopped recording the conversation. The following is its report of what happened next. Raven. The Thane had clearly fallen under the wolf's spell. A few more steps and he would have fallen into the wolf's jaws. Or worse, succeeded in untying Gleipnir and freeing the beast. I prevented this by giving the Thane a severe pecking, which broke the spell. The transcript picks up again here. Snorri Sturluson runs around screaming, Ah! Stop pecking me! Pauses and looks around. Wait a minute. Ah! Get me out of here! Runs screaming onto fold-out boat, which has miraculously reappeared. Otis and Marvin. Names. Otis, a.k.a. Tangyoster, a.k.a. Teeth Grinder. And Marvin, a.k.a. Tongrisnir, a.k.a. Snarler. Category. Edible. Homeworld, wherever Thor is. Appearance. Unkempt brown fur, curved horns, yellow eyes. Best known for. Being a satisfying meal, roasted, grilled, or stewed. Also pulling Thor's chariot. Goat-pleasing recipes by Marvin. Listen up, punks. I don't go in for therapy the way Otis does. If there's a problem, I headbutt it straight on. And right now, I got a problem with you. I don't like how you treat us. Think I'm joking? Well, chew on this. Every night, it's the same thing. Butcher, cook, chew, swallow, resurrect, repeat. That's fine. It's our fate to be slaughtered, whatever. But what I want to know is, would it kill you to spice us up a little now and then? We're bored to death with being served the same way, dinner after dinner. Look at it from our point of view, for crying out loud. A little effort is all I'm asking. Here are some ideas even dimwits like you can follow. Buffalo goat tenders. Slice us into strips, dip us in milk, and coat us with panko crumbs. Fry us in oil on both sides, dry us on a paper towel, move us to a serving dish, and smother us in buffalo sauce. Serve us with blue cheese dressing and celery. Goat pot pie. Cube us. Combine us with peas, carrots, celery, and goat broth. Boil, drain, and set aside. Sauté chopped onion and garlic. Mix with us and dump us into a pie crust. Cover us with another crust. Bake us in a dwarf kiln until golden brown. Scoop us into bowls and eat us. Goat Caesar salad or wrap. Cook and dice us. Toss us with Caesar salad dressing, hand-torn romaine lettuce, shredded Parmesan cheese, and croutons. Serve us as a salad or roll us in a wrap for an on-the-go meal. For additional recipes, consult Cybermere, will you? Sheesh. Hotel Valhalla. A final word from the manager. Dear valued guest, your journey through this helpful audio guide is coming to a close. Yet your existence in our world is just beginning. Exciting new adventures await you daily. Daily schedule of activities posted in the foyer. How will you die tomorrow? The next day? The ones after that? The possibilities are endless. Hotel management cannot be held responsible for damage to property or body or death by elevator. But perhaps your destiny will take you in a different direction. Odin chose you once before when he snatched you at death to join the ranks of his Inherjar. He may choose you again, this time to venture on a noble quest beyond the safety of the Hotel Valhalla. If he does, know this. Only the best of the best are singled out for this honor. Those who return in triumph raise higher in the ranks. Some, like Unila, Davy Crockett, the Erics, and even, inexplicably, Snorri Sturluson, are awarded seats at the Thane's table. Those who fail, however, return in disgrace. Or don't return at all, for death awaits beyond Valhalla's protection. So when you put this book aside and turn out the light, ask yourself this question. Do you have the strength, bravery, and wisdom to achieve a higher level of greatness? I emphasize that you should ask yourself. Know that if you ring the front desk and ask me this question, I will be forced to remind you that while we provide additional towels free of charge, answers to such questions cost extra. Thank you, and sleep peacefully so you can rise and do glorious battle in the morn. Wake-up calls available upon request. Press 0 and key in your room number and time you wish to be woken by a blast from Heimdall's horn. Helgi, manager of Hotel Valhalla since 749 CE. Coming in fall 2016, Rick Riordan, Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, The Hammer of Thor. 1. Could you please stop killing my goat? Lesson learned. If you take a Valkyrie out for coffee, you'll get stuck with the check and a dead body. I hadn't seen Samira Alabas in almost 6 weeks, so when she called out of the blue and said we needed to talk about a matter of life and death, I agreed right away. Technically, I'm already dead, which means the whole life and death thing didn't apply, but still. Sam sounded anxious. She hadn't yet arrived when I got to the Thinking Cup on Newbury Street. The place was packed, as usual, so I queued up for coffee. A few seconds later, Sam flew in. Literally, right over the heads of the cafe patrons. Nobody batted an eye. Regular mortals aren't good at processing magical stuff, which is fortunate, because otherwise Bostonians would spend most of their time running around in a panic from giants, trolls, ogres, and Inherjar with battle axes and lattes. Sam landed next to me in her school uniform, white sneakers, khaki slacks, and a long-sleeve navy shirt with the King Academy logo. A green hijab covered her hair. An axe hung from her belt. I was pretty sure the axe wasn't standard dress code. As glad as I was to see her, I noted that the skin under her eyes was darker than usual. She was swaying on her feet. "Hey," I said, "you look terrible." "Nice to see you too, Magnus." "No, I mean, not terrible, like different than normal terrible, just terrible like exhausted." "Should I get you a shovel so you can dig that hole a little deeper?" I raised my hands in surrender. "Where have you been the last month and a half?" Her shoulders tightened. "My workload this semester has been killing me. I'm tutoring kids after school. Then, as you might remember, there's my part-time job reaping souls of the dead and running top-secret missions for Odin. You kids today and your busy schedules. On top of all that, there's flight school." "Flight school?" We shuffled forward with the line. "Like airplanes?" I knew Sam's goal was to become a professional pilot someday, but I hadn't realized she was already taking lessons. "You can do that at 16? Her eyes sparkled with excitement. "My grandparents could never have afforded it, but the Fadlons have this friend who runs a flight school. they finally convinced Jid and Bibi. Ah, I grinned. So the lessons were a gift from Amir. Sam blushed. She's the only teenager I know who has a betrothed, and it's cute how flustered she gets when she talks about Amir Fadlon. Those lessons were the most thoughtful, the most considerate. She sighed wistfully. But enough of that. I didn't bring you here to talk about my schedule. We have an informant to meet. An informant? This could be the break I've been waiting for. If his information is good... Sam's phone buzzed. She fished it out of her pocket, checked the screen, and cursed. I have to go. You just got here. Valkyrie business. Possible code 381. Heroic death in progress. You're making that up.
I'm not.
So, what? Somebody thinks they're about to die and they text you, going down, need Valkyrie ASAP, followed by a bunch of sad face emoticons? I seem to recall taking your soul to Valhalla. You didn't text me. No, but I'm special. Just get a table outside, she said. Meet my informant. I'll be back as soon as I can. I don't even know what your informant looks like. You'll recognize him when you see him, Sam promised. Be brave. Also, get me a scone. She flew out of the shop like Super Muslima, leaving me to pay for our order. This is Kieran Culkin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Magnus Chase, Hotel Valhalla Guide to the Norse Worlds, your introduction to deities, mythical beings, and fantastic creatures by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2016 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.